This is Renovating Masculinity. My guys, what's going on?
At last, we got rid of him.
Yeah, dude, this is going to be a wonderful Wait, time.
Am I filling that seat right now?
Yeah, no JT. JT.
Dude, what would you say to JT right now?
I love you, man. I am so inspired just looking across the table at you, dude. You're my favorite. You know, that's the way I talk to JT all the time.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know that you don't recognize the voice that's coming out of the speaker along with mine today. It is not JT. His name is Keith Anderson. Now, Keith, we met like on Tinder or something, right? No? I'm thinking about a different Keith.
Maybe Tinder.
Nah. So remind me how we met. We were on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you started talking about the possibility of getting together with a group of guys.
Right, yeah. So Renovating Masculinity had just kicked off.
So this is over a year ago then.
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
At the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I did. I reached out to you on Facebook, on Messenger.
That's awesome, man. And then I remember us talking, man, and I'm like, dude, here's a guy. Like, this could actually be my brother. I mean, he's talking about all the same things that I'm talking about. He's got a heart for men. So anyway, we ended up talking, man, and I just kind of gave you whatever little piece of advice. Don't cry much. And then, you know, shoot the guys, you know, in the leg. Don't shoot them in the chest.
Right.
You know, this is the basic kind of cursory kind of stuff.
It was get as many guys as you can into the room.
Yeah.
Sit in a circle. And talk about your feelings. I think that was
and look right into their eyes as you do it.
Yeah.
No, man, but so anyway, we wanted to bring Keith on today. We have the absence. We have the luxury of not having JT's monotonous droning on voice on the line today. So we're going to have a little bit of fun. And just in preparation for spending time with you today, man, I do want to tell you that literally, I wrote down every cuss word that I could think of, man, because I was like, JT's not there to stop me, so I'm just going to use language that I'm not supposed to. I'm going to get on subjects that I'm not supposed to talk about. Like, I'm going to break all the rules, and then I'm going to blame it on you.
Okay.
And say that Keith kind of drug me into these conversations. So we know.
That's what happens when you bring somebody out from Oregon.
Yeah.
So everything goes to the left.
That's a good spot to go, man. Mm. So nobody knows you, man, and I just want to kind of dig into you for a little bit.
Okay.
So just tell me, like, who you are historically, man. I mean, like, where you grew up and just let's start there.
Yeah. So I was born in the Bay Area back in the 60s.
Cool.
My dad grew up in Oregon. And so we moved up there when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
We lived in just a little rural farming community. And I was just a child of the 70s and 80s, just growing up on my own. I had one brother.
Yeah.
But
and what's his name?
His name's Todd.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just hung out on the farm.
Yeah.
Got into as much trouble as we could.
And how long were you on the farm? How long did you live that kind of life?
Yeah, I grew up there. I went to basically first through 12th grade.
Jeez.
And then I decided I wanted to be somebody in healthcare.
Yeah.
But lacked the fortitude to go to medical school. So went off down in the southern part of the state and got a bachelor's degree in nursing.
Great.
Yep. In my finishing that up, I moved up to Salem, and that's where I met this lovely young lady named Sonia.
Yeah.
And we started our family up there.
So you're there, and then at some point, you make a decision that you want to serve your country. How's all that happen?
So my wife and I have been married for 5 years. No, excuse me, 6 years.
Oh, boy.
And we had three kids. My wife, she literally had birthed our third child, and during that final part of the pregnancy, I said, you know, I want to join the Air Force.
Yeah.
I want to go become a nurse anesthetist, CRNA. So she was like, okay, whatever. I mean, let's just go. Let's just do it.
Jeez, man.
So I got commissioned as a lieutenant in the Air Force in 1996.
Yeah.
Started the journey.
So let's back up, dude. You said, so you had been married 6 years.
Yeah.
And three kids.
Mm-hmm.
So is your nickname conscientious? I mean, you were getting after it, man. That's quick draw McGraw right there. There's a lot of kids going on in 6 years.
I'm just speechless.
All right, man. So you end up in the military, and then where do you do from that?
So I started out working on a critical care air transport team and just going wherever that we had. Our base commander in San Antonio was a general who was building these little teams that were super light footprint, go where anywhere in the world, pick up somebody who's either a active duty guy or a DOD contractor that maybe was in another country that was sick or injured and needed to come back to the States.
Yeah.
So we did that for quite a few years. And then the doors got open for me to go full-time into an anesthesia training program through the U.S. Army. We did all that through UT Houston Health Sciences.
So what's the pull? What's the pull that pulls you from that kind of a profession, yeah, and you decide that you want to spend time with guys? Because I know that you have a similar heart,
yeah,
as the show does, about masculinity and men, yeah, and Band of Brothers, mm-hmm, and all those kinds of things. So how do you connect that?
Yeah, that's great. I loved that camaraderie that you had being in the military. You know, there was always that. You know, I did a tour in Iraq. We talked about, you know, in Balad in 2007, and you know, even though I wasn't like guys that are out there, you know, in the suck, you know, humping weapons around and getting shot at and blown up. We were in the hospital taking care of casualties.
Yeah.
So I kind of had more of the MASH 4077,
yeah,
side of that, as opposed to the, you know, the guys that were really in the stink. And
you weren't the guy. You weren't the guy in the dress, right? Like on MASH.
Yeah, I can't confirm or deny that.
That's good.
I actually did wear a combat kilt.
You did?
Yes, I did. I got pictures. I'll send you a picture.
That's the thing.
Me and my combat kilt.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, great, man. Well, it's good to have you here, man. And I just wanted to kind of let everybody get a general idea of who, yeah, you are. And then we also have another voice that's going to be on with us today. He's going to chime in and bring some sense to this whole conversation.
I don't know if that's possible, but I'll see what I can do.
Who are you, man? You're just this random voice that pops in from time to time.
Well, that's all I'm really made to be. I'm just kind of running things over here, and that's what I do. And
cool.
I just sit in the corner and I listen, and if JT says something stupid, then I let him know.
There you go.
Yeah.
He was looking at you. Speaking of that, man, I thought it was pretty cool, man, your father-in-law on the last show that we did, Don't Say Gay. Man, every time he would make a statement, man, he would kind of look over to you and go, hey.
I know. What,
how did I do?
I know.
Like, cool, man.
He's so funny. He just wants that moral support.
Yeah.
You know?
Had you guys had conversation about it all, or was he just, for the first time, were you hearing the same things that I was hearing?
Yeah, not about that topic.
Yeah.
We have a lot of conversations about big issues that come up. I mean, it's very convenient to have a father-in-law who, you know, is in men's
who's
ministry,
not very smart.
Pithy. Who's a crisis counselor, a marriage counselor, all in one, you know.
It's, yeah.
It's kind of nice to do a little quick pit stop with him every once in a while and,
yeah,
get a gauge on things. Mm. And so we talk a lot about that stuff, but a lot of times what we're talking about on the podcast is, I think, fresh for most of us.
Good.
A lot of times we don't know what we're getting into.
Yeah,
that's
intentionally.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're not so canned. You know, but so for me, man, it's good to be here this morning. You know, Keith drove up this morning and I had an appointment before I got here. And so I know how I had been telling everybody, hey, I need to go get some help, which everybody seems to agree with me when I say I need to get some help.
No comment.
Thank you for your support, man. And so I finally found a counselor, a therapist, and that sounds more clinical. I'll say it.
No,
therapist.
No, I'm with you because I started therapy counseling last year.
Mm-hmm. Really, man?
Yeah, and I don't really
Twins.
Know what to call it either.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if I say therapy, it sounds like something's really wrong.
Yeah.
If I say counselor, it's like, oh, you're making a wise decision. You know, like, I've battled with that inside for a while.
So anyway, man, it's just something that I've been threatening to do for years and years and years. And I think that I've mentioned on air that I had one experience with it 4 or 3 years ago, I don't know, and I thought it was awesome. And then my insurance changed, and I had an excuse not to continue because he didn't take my insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to escape out of that.
Yep.
And so I've been looking, air quotations, for a counselor or a therapist all these years. So finally, man, just recently, still going around the same mountain, man, I'm like, I have to figure out a time to go and get some counseling. I don't know what it holds for me, mm-hmm, but I need to go. So that's what I did this morning. So Keith was on his drive up. He and his family are visiting nearby, 2 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
He took away from his vacation to come up and see some knucklehead that he met on Tinder. I mean, on Facebook. And he came up to see me, man, and JT. And JT is very busy right now. So we're hanging out together. And I said, we're doing a freaking podcast today. But when I jumped out of the car and I looked at him, he goes, hey, man, what's going on? He's all excited. And I go, I'm raw.
He's raw.
this was your first?
First.
Oh, yeah. You get the hangover experience after that. It's...
Dude, I had no idea. And like, this was the introduction. Hey, guy, how you doing? I'm this and I'm that. And here's my style, what's your wife's name, okay, what's your kid's name, blah, blah, blah. And for anybody listening, man, you know, I always tell you guys that I am an introvert in that I like deep, rich conversations, like fluff and across the top and networking to me is like the devil's work. Like I believe that it is wrong to do. And so I don't do well like in mixers and just let's just go in and chat for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. So when I went in with him and he's like, well, where do we start? You know, I dig straight in. Well, I was abused when I was like 3 or 4 years old. He's like sitting back in his chair. And I go, and I told him the same thing. I go, hey, I'm introvert, man. I find it fairly easy to go deep pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And he's going, great. And so, man, and so I just sit there for probably 20 minutes and kind of go through these wounds that I can recall in my head. And then I realize, man, how drained I am just having said this out loud, man. And just being able to express it to somebody and have them look back at you and go, there's hope. And I was telling Keith, man, you know, I told him how it affects my marriage, how it affects my relationships, that I just feel like a lot of times I'm reacting to things that are not actually in front of me. They are behind me.
Yeah.
And the thing that's in front of me is triggering a thought and I'm connecting it to someone behind me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just doing all this and trying to talk to him in and go, dude, am I crazy? Like, and he just says something very simply, man. He goes, hey, what you're saying is very familiar to me. I think you're on the right track. I say the prognosis is very favorable because you're not, you know, saying it's my wife, it's the people, it's this. You know, right. It was like having a big brother, your father, and your grandpa all rolled into one, and maybe one of your most impactful bosses looking at you going, you can do this.
Yeah.
And so it was very helpful, man. But just as it went on and on and on, it's incredibly difficult just to talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. And, man, when I walked out of that building, I went in my car and there was like tears in my eyes and I don't even know what they were saying, what the tears were saying. But I was just like, man, so I'm on my new journey. So that's kind of what I did today.
I wanted to back up the bus for a second because you guys both had talked about recently finding somebody.
Yeah.
Walk me through that. Like, what did that look like for you guys in terms of like, and maybe for the benefit of guys that are listening.
Oh, that's true.
How did you come to the conclusion, this is the guy I'm going to go see?
Yeah,
you go. That's great. Okay. So one of my best friends, his mom is a counselor, and she's super cool. We hang out with her and him at the same all the time. She's great. And so I approached her because I was like, hey, it's time. I think I need to start talking to someone. Can you make a recommendation for me? And she sent me maybe 5 names in the Nashville area. And I just went on their websites and kind of scanned what they were about. I knew I wanted someone who was faith-based.
Yeah.
Because it's like, how do you go to someone who doesn't share your belief system and talk through your problems and your worldview? You know? So I was like, I need someone who's on the same page as me there. Someone who I think is kind of similar to me. I chose kind of like... No offense to him.
He's a brilliant man.
He's got that nerdy thing to him. And I'm like, yep, that, I think we'll jive together well. And I chose very wisely, I think. I just kind of, I mean, price was a thing too. I would check all the prices on their websites, see what their rates were, and see where they were located, and then see what kind of work they address. Because some of them do different things, you know? And so I just chose one that felt right, more general, kind of the things that I want to get into.
So I'll summarize, you reached out to your network who gave you options. Mm-hmm. You had some kind of preconceived ideas of like, I need somebody that's going to share my worldview.
Right.
Because if I don't, then, you know, some of the psychology can take you way off course.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. Yeah.
And lead you to maybe places where it's not right or it's...
I've heard, my wife, just in her line of work, she gets stories all the time and she has clients who come in and tell the most... Well, yeah, my therapist said I need to get a free pass in my marriage and go start finding the right guy. Yeah, I was like, wait, licensed therapists can tell people to go cheat on their husbands? Yeah, like, what's going on? So I was like, I got to find someone grounded. Mm-hmm. I got to find the right guy for me.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be a man, for sure. I wanted it to be a guy.
You consciously made that choice.
I made that choice because I was like, I just think I need to talk these issues through with another man.
Because I'm thinking that, if you don't go through that checklist, now that's your anti-checklist, right? Now, here's all the reasons why, I don't have time. I don't have this, right?
Yeah.
That's when all those excuses start creeping through.
Definitely.
If you don't think it through and making a plan.
Now, you have some experience with going through therapy as well.
Yeah.
And it's been, like, do you currently go?
No, I mean, I don't see a professional.
Yeah.
I mean, for me now, it's, I think it's like that ongoing, you know, maintaining the garden by, you know, your band of brothers.
Sure.
People definitely. That you have skin in the game with.
But right? You did, but you went through something that was quite challenging with your therapy. Tell us about that. Like, how long was it?
Yeah, so it was 6 months.
Yeah.
It was every Tuesday night from 6:30 to 9 p.m. And you had to go. You had to pay for it, right? And it was based on how your ability to pay. It's called Life Skills International, started by Charles Hegstrom, who's written a whole bunch of books. And he gives a lot of deep personal testimony throughout this course and in his books. And then, you know, Jay, who was the guy that was leading us, and it was a group of 12 guys.
Yeah.
They separate women from men. And it predominantly, it's for men who are physically – well, any type of abuse to their spouse.
Yeah.
Because Hegstrom's, that's his story. You know, he was sexually molested as a kid in church, and then that morphed into wife beating and other things. I don't want to misquote everything him, but I would recommend highly going and reading Hegstrom's stuff. Great material.
So you're a fan. You're a fan of therapy.
Yeah. I mean, it changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, it saved my marriage. It saved my relationship with my kids. It kept me employed. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
There's
right?
some benefits.
I mean, it's more than anything, I'll just confess that it changed the way I think and act as a Christian man.
That's great, man.
You know, that's, we talked about some of those verses that.
Yeah. Yeah. The ones that impact you.
Yeah.
Jonah,
yeah.
So what's your end game, man? Like,
okay.
I need to go because I want to end up where? What's your end game?
This is something I've been thinking about a lot lately because I've been in for 6 months now. Mm. And that's a mile marker point where you're like, do I need to keep going or not? Mm-hmm. And I'm terrified to make that decision right now.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been needing to talk to someone for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And I just hadn't done it because I was surrounded by really good people, but never going all the way deep. Mm-hmm. It was always, hey, I have this problem. How should I deal with this? And then I, you know, like I have you and I have JT and I have family, really wise friends, church friends. Like I got a lot of people in my life who speak into me. But there's such an importance in doing the work with your origin story and with the stuff that you don't tell anyone else.
Yeah.
And that's why I decided, I think there's stuff affecting my decision making, affecting my daily life that I need to process out loud.
Yes.
So I was like, I don't really know what the end game is. I just know because I went and said, hey, how long are people supposed to stay in this? when am I, quote, healed? Like,
when am I going to know
when am I take that orange jumpsuit off?
Yeah. And when is my bank account going to stabilize, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's been my question all along. And I've not really known what the answer is. And I feel like what it's going to be is me just saying, hey, let's pause because I feel like I'm at a place where I'm not bringing in heavy, heavy things back every week. The past few weeks, I've kind of gone in not really knowing what to talk about. Of course, things will come up and we'll get into a good conversation, but I'm getting to a point where we've kind of talked about the things that I wanted to talk about. So my thought is it's going to get to a point where I say, let's press pause. And then if I feel the need, like I'm not over something or we need to get back in, then I'll reach back out, maybe get back on your schedule. Like, that's my thought.
So and I'm new to this, man. I'm, for all intended purposes, a virgin to going and telling somebody professionally. What is it that's different about, say, speaking to somebody that you know or one of your friends and going to a clinical setting like this? You feel like it's different.
It is different because a couple things. I've been talking with my wife about this a lot, too, because now I'm like, hey, everybody needs to try this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just different. This person has no ties to your life at all. They are completely uninvolved, completely neutral perspective. So you get to tell everything. They see, they're not only analyzing what you say, they're analyzing the way you say it. They're analyzing your biases, everything. And they are asking the questions that you will never think to ask. And there's the thing that gets me every time, though, is just I tell my whole story, and then the only thing he has to say is, well, what are you feeling? Well, how do you feel about that? And it sounds so cliche from the therapy world, but at the end of the day, that's what it is. Because we often don't take the time to stop and take inventory of how we actually feel about things. We just we're just stuck in the problem. We think it through. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, what was the question?
Yeah, you already answered
What's
it.
What's the step-off cool. point? But I'm curious, do you get feedback from your spouse?
His yes. spouse is a therapist as
yeah,
well.
Right.
Right.
Because tell us what she does.
She is a hairstylist.
Yeah.
Okay,
so she's
yeah, right.
like straight
oh,
up
yeah.
therapist.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. She comes home and tells the hardest stories yeah. I've ever heard in my life from yeah. people who come in. And she had a woman who lost her son. And she said, this is the first place I've been in public since oh. I've lost my son. And came and sat in her chair and got her hair done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you have to see what impact you're making on people's lives by being in yeah. that position. It's yep. everyone is a bit of a therapist, but talking about professional therapists, it's so intentional because you have to schedule a time, you have to pay for the time, mm-hmm. and you have to come with things to talk about.
Right.
And so there's a demand that presents itself that says, you better use this time
yeah.
well
right.
and get your stuff out and talked about
yeah.
because mm-hmm. like, don't waste this. This is an opportunity mm-hmm. here. And so it's like, it's just so different. I love that my therapist he's able to analyze my life from a complete outside perspective, and I'm able to tell him anything without him really being surprised, mm-hmm. I guess. Like, he shows empathy and shock about some things, but
he's good at controlling his eyebrows.
Yeah, exactly. And I've noticed that too. I'm like, so intentional, you know, he sits in the most neutral position.
Yeah.
No, just the most blazing eye contact I've ever seen in my
life.
It's
like a straight up game to him. He's like, I am not going to be moved.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, but I think it's so important. I've come to respect it a lot and really understand why it costs what it does and why it demands the time it does.
So I'm new, man, but is a therapist somebody like, has your therapist ever looked at you and went like, you're full of crap? I don't buy that.
Never.
Never.
Never, never, never. I think even if you are, they will guide you to that point in a way.
To see it to yourself.
Yes, exactly. Because that happens to me all the time. I will say, though, I remember one instance where I told this story and then I said, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm just being selfish, but I don't really care. And he was like, well, Jonas, it's never okay to be selfish. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I didn't mean that I was okay. I don't know if I'm okay with it or not. But
yeah.
Thanks for pressing me on that. You know, like, he'll call it out sometimes, but for the most part, it's leading you to the answers that, like, it's very strange
yeah.
the way mm-hmm. that the process works. You know?
Mm. I'm so convinced of one thing, though, after talking to you two, man, that I am so much better than both of you guys in my hunt for a therapist.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is the right way to do it, and this is the way I did it. So I talked to my insurance company, and I spoke to a girl. It was like she called me back because she goes, are you in crisis? And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I'm kind of always in crisis, but no.
Define crisis.
Yeah, define that. And then she's asking me questions, how I'm feeling, and do I want to hurt anybody? You know, she's taking me through this regimen of questions. And then so I begin to ask her questions, and I'm like, I don't know who that I need to go see. How do I start? You know, how do I know if they're the right ones? And she's like, you won't. You'll have to trust somebody and then go see somebody.
Oh,
and if they're the right one, you'll know. And if not, you have to go to another one and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, so what's the hardest degree that you can get? You know, and they go, and she told me, blah, blah, blah. I won't say here.
Alphabet soup.
Yeah, because somebody will disagree.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she started telling me about the different degrees. And I go, okay, so send me a list of providers that are in our insurance, in my family's insurance. And this is how I know I'm so much better than you two
uh-huh.
at hunting and getting a therapist. Because when I got the list, I just filtered out everybody that didn't have that degree. And then I prayed and I said, Lord God, lead me to the one that I'm supposed to go to. And then I looked down through there until I saw a name that sounded trustworthy.
Yes.
And then I said, and I didn't care if it was
this
a man.
This is so scientific. Yes, I love this.
I'm telling you, I'm better than you two.
Yeah,
I just want to cement it in.
Okay.
And so I'm looking at this list and I find a name that I like. And I didn't care if it was a girl or a boy at this point. I just know that I am broken and I need some help.
Sure.
And I finally found a name, man, and I sent him this email. And I go, dude, I'm curious if you are the right person for me. And I just go, got all this stuff that I'm dealing with. You ever seen that? And he texts me back, and man, it's like classic therapist kind of communication, man. He's just like, oh, God, I deal with this kind of stuff every day and blah. Seeing many people like this have successful blah, blah, blahs. And I'm like, okay, That's my guy. See, that's what I'm saying. See, that's the way I chose. I didn't go through, you know, does he believe in God?
Okay.
You know, even though that's like the most important thing in my life, and now you're making me rethink the guy that I just went to. And you know how you start talking Christianese, man, to try and find out if people actually believe in God?
Yeah.
So I started throwing that stuff out. Mm-hmm. He started, you know, Christianeseing back to me. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. And he knew where Bethel was.
There you go. So
that's about as close as we got to finding out.
Now, you didn't tell me there was one thing that you said at the end of that, that he also happens to be a hairstylist.
Yeah. So
amazing.
And I told him I wouldn't give him much business on that side of the program because I've been bald since I was probably 17 years old.
All right.
Dang.
But yeah, so I did have my first session today, man, and I really enjoyed it, man.
That's awesome. And now you're here having your second one.
Yeah. I'm coming in here to teach you a lesson. That's I'm going to take out all my like pent up hostility.
That's great.
Hey, so when you say you feel raw, talk about that.
Man, just I get very few. This is in general life. Man, I like having really deep conversations with consequences. Mm-hmm. When I'm with my friends, man, I don't mind, you know, talking about fluff and kind of what we did around the house. But, man, I like conversations, man, when we start to talk about where we hope to be and hopes and desires, man, things that motivate us, things that we're afraid of, just all those kinds of things that you never really get to hear in real life. Man, those are the kinds of things that really set me on fire. And I can sit and have those kinds of conversations for hours. But just sitting down with him, you know, I feel like it was an outlet to be able to communicate in a way that was deep. It was intentionally so. I wasn't afraid that someone wasn't going to be able to go there with me. Mm-hmm. And then the subject matter for me, Keith, man, like I do kind of fluff over the top about some of the struggles that I've had, but I don't go deep. And I even tell JT all the time, man, there's things that I've done in my life that I'm still even embarrassed to tell him. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the way that I've lived in several areas of my life when I was a drug dealer and all those kinds of things. But just having someone where I could just peek into those conversations, man, I run from that memory, man. I run from those places that I can remember doing the kinds of things that I've done. And just to sit down with somebody, man, and just admit that these things are a reality in my life, man, it really, like, it spit me around. And I haven't even had a chance to process it because immediately I saw you and then I was happy.
Yeah, right.
But when I came out of that therapist's office, man, I sat in the car and I'm like, dude, can I really go see him right now? I don't know that I'm going to be able to bounce back and even be able to communicate to him. So that's why the first thing I said, let's go have a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can segue into it. But raw, man, I just, when I say that, I mean that emotionally. Had you said the wrong thing, Keith, man, I probably would have cried, man. I'm telling you. Wow. Like, when I tell you raw, man, I just don't know. There's so many emotions firing, and they're all like, you know, that cut, like it's just very sensitive to everything. And when I was in the car driving this way, I'm like, no, I don't even know if I can do the podcast. Mm. Like, am I going to be able to, you know, comprehend or communicate or anything?
Right.
But yeah, that's what I mean when I say raw, man, just completely open, wide open, man. I guess it's like when you get out of the pool, man, and the cold air hits you. I mean, you just feel it everywhere. And that's the way I feel emotionally right now, man. And I guess it's a good thing because I don't get a chance to go there that often. Yeah. Man.
No, that's great. I think, the hardest part of all of it for me was starting. Like, because every single step of the way, you got to be determined to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's like if you're going to jump, you know, if you're at the lake or something, you're going to jump off a cliff into the lake. It's like, so you're going to boat over there. That's like, you got to be determined to get in the area. The then plan. You got to get in the water. Then you got to get out of the water, onto the rocks. Then you got to climb the rocks. Then you got to go to the edge, and then you got to jump off the edge. And you have to be determined every single step of the way. And I felt like it was sort of the same with this because it was like, well, I got to decide that I need it. And then I have to start searching for what I need. Then I have to schedule what I need. Then I have to pay for what I need. Then I have to go to what I need.
Yeah.
And it was like every single step of the way I had to say, don't be too embarrassed to do this. Don't be too embarrassed or ashamed to do this. Like, do it. Just keep doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the word that floats around, and I don't know about your therapy session, but in mine, the word that floats around most that I try to avoid is the word shame.
Yeah.
Because everything seems to come back to everything spiderwebs from shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just the way that I'm realizing that that impacts all our decision making, all of our behavior. It just, it's a lot to do with it. So I think shame is there a lot.
Does every guy, does every, in your opinion, and we're not anybody, we're just three guys, does everybody need to go and see a therapist? Do you really feel that way?
Man, I really think so. Because doing the importance of doing the work to understand your story, as successful as you are, as much mental clarity as you may have, and as together as your life may be, the benefits of talking to someone else about the things that you struggle with that maybe you don't tell anyone else, or the things that secretly affect you, those benefits are priceless.
I'm gonna say there's two answers to that.
Yeah.
Like, on the one hand, I agree with you totally that, that having somebody who can come at you clinically, professionally, without, you know, any of that judgment, if we'll use that word, that you can just be raw with, you can just expose it, you can just talk about it, get it out there, because you don't have to worry about the shame or the guilt that you feel if you're with your band, a band of brothers or a close friend, or maybe even, dare I say, your spouse or something like that, right? But somebody else that you're like, I'm going to fudge a little bit on this one. I'm not going to do full disclosure. Mm-hmm. But so I think each person needs to recognize that I think there's a lot of times for me when I do really rely on that group of guys that I meet with, and that I think that's good habit. It's good to practice being genuine and authentic with this group of guys that God's put in my life. But there are times when I'm in too deep. Like there's too much of what's going on in my life that for these guys to handle. And now I got to recognize that I have to go see a pro.
That's good.
Right. Yeah.
And the feeling that you can't, there comes a point where you can't become a burden in your band of brothers.
Yeah, he's always got a problem.
Right.
That guy's always got something real deep he needs to talk about.
Again, Keith, come on.
It's a fine line, but, you know, I think sometimes it can get to a point where your friends, your brothers, whoever, can only pull so much weight for you.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where it comes time to seek someone out who is trained in handling these issues professionally.
You know, I get a chance to meet, and I'm sure you do too. You meet a lot of accomplished guys, man. And if you get, sometimes when you can get down, get them to really talk to you clearly and concisely and honestly, man, you get to a place in a lot of conversations where no matter how smart, no matter how brilliant, no matter how successful, that everybody, and some people it's bigger and some people it's smaller, but they all have a common fear is they're going to be found out somehow that they're a fraud in some category of life.
Yeah,
totally.
And you talk about shame, like shame's directly tied to that thing because even if you're not consciously doing it, you're hiding a piece of you to protect the possibility of being found out. And you could be a great in every area, but when you sit down with the right person, all of a sudden you feel like you're not.
Yeah.
And some people, like generally in life, they always feel that way, that somebody is better educated or knows a little bit more. And they're always, you know, worried about being found out as a fraud. And that's what I think about as far as going to therapy, man. I don't want to walk around in life, man, with things on me and attached to me where I'm in situations and reacting certain ways. And I'm like, man, am I supposed to be feeling this? Because I don't know. I honestly don't know when I'm reacting to things. I don't know if, like, I'm reacting to what's in front of me. It's like, and it's not the same. Well, it may be. You know, PTSD, like, I've been through some very traumatic, you know, violent things growing up, and even at the hands of my mom. Sometimes I don't know if I'm actually seeing what is happening in front of me, not like a hallucination, but am I reacting to actually what's in front of me, or am I way back when I'm 7 years old? And I get the idea quite often that I am reacting to something back
then. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say just that just completely reminds me of all the stuff that I was learning through Hegstrom, that Hegstrom says that at that point as a child, when you're traumatized, everything freezes. And your brain can't handle some of the neurotransmitter activity even in your brain to process that. And so then that turns into a funky pathway in your brain later on down the road as you grow up and mature, you still react the same way. Well, you're reacting like a 9-year-old. Why is that? Because you're trapped in that. And there's some really, really cool stuff that Hegstrom unpacks in his stuff.
Yeah.
That really addresses that to, because again, like we talked about earlier, it's all about that, the reactive lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
Why, and then what are the things that I'm doing currently in my day that are keeping me from a true reality check, right? Or what am I thinking about? What am I not processing the right way? So that my perception of things is distorted, right? I know we got Dr. Rodriguez who could probably speak to that so much better than I could. I'm just a...
Yeah, he's taking notes right now when he listens to this.
I make people's brains numb for a living, you know. He tries to coax out the dysfunctional.
You know, and I know too, man, being wounded, man, it can make you very selfish. Because I was talking, I think I mentioned this to you today, Keith. Like sometimes, man, if my wife is upset about something, you know, it is imperative that we settle this right now. Mm. And I never really could put together why is it so important that this be addressed immediately and be settled and discussed, you know, and all of this right now. Because if I slowed down and looked at my wife's need, my wife needs to internalize, process, think it over, have a moment of quiet time. She needs to get to a place where she even knows what she wants to say or what she wants to talk about. But I'm like, right now, you're disrespecting this moment, man. I mean, this marriage is important. Let's go. Mm-hmm. We got to get this fixed. We can't let this stuff just be around. And just in a moment of clarity, and I really do think that it was the Holy Spirit for me, it just reminded me of when I sensed that my mom was in a really bad mood, that could mean violence and possibly physical violence for me. So it was very important that I get her back to even kilt.
Right. Let's get this over with. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I need to get you here so I can have a sense of safety.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm imprinting that on my wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here's another female in my wife. You said, what was the thing you said? He said,
this is not my wife.
Yeah.
So that reality check, according to Hegstrom, was all the negative that was being projected from that issue with your mom.
Yeah.
You were projecting it onto your wife, and that's not reality. And going through that process of calling it out and saying, this is my wife, not my mother, out loud to yourself. This is my wife, not my mother. And saying it like at least three times out loud to yourself, you know, just that helps you process that so that you get that reality check and then you can come back and not be as reactive.
And then when the psychologist leaves, because she's going to call him because you're sitting there going, you're not my mom. Mm-hmm. You're not my mom. No, seriously, though, in that moment, I was like, there's an answer. Mm-hmm. There's an answer. I'm reacting to something. I'm trying to fix something that I couldn't fix as a kid. And here I am trying to work that out as an adult. And that was one of the catalysts to me going, there's some screwy stuff going on in you, bro.
So on that. Very similarly, I think I got into situations where I would get into I would be in a conversation, I would be in an argument, I would be in a discussion, a hard, terrible discussion, or I would have done something wrong. Someone, whether it's my wife, my friend, whoever would approach me and say, man, why are you doing this? You know, why did you act that way? Or why did you say that? Or, you know, what's going on? And I found my common reason to be, I don't know, I've just always been that way.
Mm.
And that, the fact that that was my answer to myself for years and years and years made me realize, okay, I got to figure out why I am this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my primary motivator for doing this and for figuring out what's going on in my head and stuff.
I think the opposite to that for me was that, you know, when you have that, we talked earlier about shame and the defense mechanism for that mentally and emotionally is denial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this great big warm quilt you put on and it feels so good. You don't have a care in the world, right? I mean, if you're freezing and you're wearing something warm, you're sitting in front of the fire, that denial really works just to keep you numb, keep you disaffected. But when you do the work and you take that quilt off, you know, and everybody's got to get there on their own at that point where you recognize, I got to do something about this.
Yeah,
definitely. That's the hardest part because then you can walk around and be like, man, that guy just needs therapy and he doesn't realize it yet.
Do you think that takes something internal in you before you'll actually make that an actionable item in your life? Like, in other words, do you have to come to that realization that I got to fix this? Or can you hear a brother or your wife or your girl, you know, whatever. Could you, do you have that person who can speak that strongly into your life, or does it have to come from within?
Mm. Man, well, I'm going to tell you that I'm hopeful that it can come externally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because my whole reason for bringing it up today, man, was in some small way to demystify this whole thought of going through therapy. And we are in all different places and we had different needs mm-hmm. of going to speak to someone. But I just want guys to know, man, that there's any number of reasons that a guy might go get some therapy. Mm. And I never answered the question myself, do I think everyone needs, you know, to go see a therapist? And I guess I'm going to have to waffle a little bit too and go, probably everybody needs to see a professional therapist. And I'm assuming that there's somebody out there that had this childhood and was great and mm-hmm. parents were well-kiltered and they didn't have any violence and all that. I know that it happens. I saw it on Leave It to Beaver. Mm-hmm. So I know that
was
people...
That Chris, was he?
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, actually, Chris Tyrell. Mr. Frickin' Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, his household was like that. Nobody's going to need counseling there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just... possibly there are people that are well-adjusted in that way and they won't. But I think, like, from the people that I know, and I do know screwed up people, I will admit that. Mm. But the people that I know, man, I think that they could all need some time or take some time with a counselor to unpack some things, because I think that we're all hanging on the little bitty wounds and being babies about things. Yeah. And that's not being derogatory, but literally we're trapped at those times when they happen. And I think that every man needs to go see someone. But my hope was, in talking about it here, in the same reason that I talk about sexual abuse and physical abuse mm-hmm. and mental abuse and emotional abuse mm-hmm. openly that's happened in my life, because I don't want men walking around going, somehow that's my fault. Because none of it's your fault, but it's your fault if you decide to hang on to it mm-hmm. right. and let it affect all of your great and powerful relationships in mm-hmm. your life. And Keith, you had a gem growing up, man. I mean, a freaking diamond in your wife, because yeah. you told me that she kind of set, you know, a line in the sand and goes, you can be sick and alone, or you can be with me and your family mm-hmm. and get some work.
Yeah.
And I think that is a great blessing to have someone to shoot straight with you like that in your life.
Absolutely. That was the big motivator for me too, was that, you know, I watched my parents' relationship fall apart. And so the only thing that I ever clung to, other than Christ when I got saved as a young adult, was that marriage was this sanctified thing, that you don't let that get screwed up ever. And yet here I was in the middle of letting my relationship fall apart with my wife because of verbal and emotional neglect and abuse.
Yeah.
And she called me out on it. And I needed to hear that only from her. Because she was, you know, the primary recipient of, you know, of us being together. Mm-hmm. And it really impacted me. And I was going to even confess that, you know, I told you we had gone to other churches and gone before pastors. Sometimes your pastor isn't always equipped, right, to deal with this. It maybe, you know, that the answer is, well, maybe you need to be in scripture and praying and fasting more, which isn't a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes they're just not equipped to deal with that.
You said one of your pastors said, hey, threw his hands up. Hey, dude, I'm a shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm not really equipped to do that thing. And a lot of times, man, I think that was brave of him too, because
honest,
a lot of times pastors feel like they're supposed to be everything.
Right.
And then, so they just wing it.
Yeah.
They fake it till they make it.
Right.
And they put you in hands, man, that are not the most adequate hands to be taking care of you.
Right.
But, you know, speaking of wives, and then we'll get ready to land this plane, man. You know, so we're going around the same mountain, and my wife and I are arguing about something. And the doctor asked me what it was, the therapist. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what we were arguing about. But, man, she said something very pointed, because I'm like, man, it's just crazy, like, how this is affecting my life. You know, physical abuse, sexual abuse, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. She goes, yeah, but how long will you stay wounded? How long are we going to stay wounded? We both need to let somebody help us heal. I'm like, shoot, how long am I willing to stay wounded and let all the relationships around me catch the shrapnel? Mm-hmm. And it felt very selfish in that moment, rather than being, you know, just helpless she was saying, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Now freaking do something, bro.
Right.
And it was very helpful. In that moment, it felt like an attack. But when I was stopped and honest with myself, I'm like, she loved me just then. Mm-hmm. She loved me. And I'll say this, and this is the last thing, and then we'll wind down. But God gave me something the other day when I was talking about this feeling of not being respected. And this wasn't audible, and it was in my heart. So I'm not saying that God is speaking to me, and we got cell phones talking to each other. But in my heart, I knew that God was really explaining this thing to me, that it is not your wife's job to make you feel respected. It is your wife's job to respect you as her husband, as I have mandated in the Bible. Hmm. What you take and do with that and the way you feel about that is not her responsibility. Only that she do it. If she is a Christian, if she is a Christ follower, mm-hmm. she understands how she is to respect you. Mm-hmm. If she does that to the best of her ability, she is then free, because it is not her job to make sure that you perceive it. And I knew in my heart that I am so calloused over and wounded in several ways that my wife could literally exemplify a respecting wife, like in living color. And at times I still would not be able to perceive it.
Yep.
Because I'm filtering it through tons and tons of wounds. Hmm. So that was very important for me, because I know what it means to do your best and do a job that you are really proud of, to have somebody go, not good enough. Hmm. And I feel like at times that I do that with my wife. Not
Definitely.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Not good enough. Not good enough. And what happens when somebody says not good enough times?
You believe it.
And you stop freaking trying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that really what we want as men with the important people in our lives? So we admit that there are times that we need to acknowledge that we are wounded. And it's not an excuse to admit that, but how long will you stay wounded?
And I think even if there are wounds that you can't really pinpoint in your life, but you just get the feeling every now and then that something is off, or you get that feeling of, well, I've just always been like this, or, well, this is just how things are going to be for me. You know, those are red flags just as much as the wounds are that you carry around, reason enough to go find someone to talk to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You don't have to have, believe it or not, my story looks a little different from Anthony's. we have different backgrounds. And so, but we both ended up doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And seeking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've always struggled with is, well, what's my rock bottom and how was I pulled out of that? Or how am I going to have this giant testimony? But that was really never my story. It was just kind of a, hey, something's not right here. I think I need to go figure out what it is. And that's really what a lot of my motivation was.
I think that's an intelligent man suggestion for being. Like, it doesn't have to be this huge thing that you've endured, but if you have reactions and behaviors in your life where the answer is overwhelmingly and always, it's just the way I've always been,
yep.
Maybe that's your sign. Maybe that's your moment to go, I need to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because literally you're saying, I have no control over my behavior right
exactly.
now. It's just the way that I am.
Yep.
Yeah. And then maybe you also have surrounded yourself with people that are just going to nod their heads and say, yeah, it's okay. We'll put up with that, right? You don't have people that will be honest and have the integrity to say, no,
yeah.
you're wrong.
And it's not that they won't discuss it. Yeah. They just don't discuss it around you. Because
right.
when you leave, sure. they go,
oh, my goodness.
Friggin' Anthony, bro. Yeah.
How much longer are we going to come to this group with this
yeah.
guy?
Uh-huh. He's a moron. But thanks so much, Keith, man, for coming. And we're going to go get some Nashville hot chicken
Ooh,
after
boy.
We leave here, man. Because, I mean, you can't show up in Nashville and not get hot chicken.
Oh, yeah.
So, and thank you, sir, for stepping in and being a much better, younger, good-looking mm-hmm. version
Keep
of
going.
JT.
Keep going.
So, as in all things, men, we are just men under renovation.
Renovating Masculinity is a Wise Company production and is hosted by JT McCraw and Anthony Flemons. To get connected with other men looking to build right, join our private Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/renovatingmasculinity and find us online at renovatingmasculinity.com and on Instagram @renovatingmasculinity.